It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Has time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight. Steps up, gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul to the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again, trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right, needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. That's your phone number. Give us a call as we get ready for Giants and Eagles. Giants at 0-4 and the Eagles at 1-3. You can also send your questions on Twitter to hashtag GiantsChat. John Schmelk, Lance Meadow with you for the next hour plus talking Giants football. And Lance, I'm sure a lot of the talk today is going to be about a lot of the media reports last night, talking about a prospective John Beeson trade. No word from the Giants on that yet, but if those media reports are correct, he's going to be undergoing a physical today, and we'll see if the Giants can add a linebacker to their group, which, quite frankly, this year has struggled a little bit.
They can certainly use depth in that department. John Beeson's a former Pro Bowler. He made the Pro Bowl 3 times. He's a 2-time All-Pro. But you have to keep in mind, that was from 2007 to 2010. He has been injury-plagued. He had a torn Achilles tendon. He had microfracture knee surgery in the offseason. So expectations need to be kept in check, assuming this deal does go through.
Now, I don't want to totally put the wet blanket on this whole thing, but this reminds me a lot of the Curry signing in the offseason, where it's a guy that came in as a high draft pick, much like Beeson. Now, Beeson did have success on the pro level, unlike Curry, and that's the big difference here, and I understand that. That being said, this is a guy who's been chronically injured the last 3 or 4 years. I believe in the last 3 seasons heading into this one, he's only played in 6 football games, if memory serves me right. And you can't expect him to come in here and be an impact player right away. He has to learn the defense. And remember this, folks. Opening day, he was starting for Carolina, right? By week 3, when the Panthers played the Giants, Chase Blackburn had beaten him out for his job and taken it away from him. And remember, Chase Blackburn's the guy that was on the Giants last year, and they decided not to re-sign because they didn't think he was good enough to make this roster. So that should give you an idea of exactly where John Beeson is at in terms of his career. Now, is it worth it to take a flyer to see exactly what he can do? Sure, it can hurt, especially with the Mark Herzlick toe injury. Dan Connor obviously out for the year. So you roll the dice, you bring him in, he's a veteran linebacker. At the very least, he knows what he's doing. He's a smart player. But I would not put all my eggs in this basket thinking he's going to turn around this defense and all of a sudden, bam, top 10 defense.
Low risk, high reward.
Exactly.
I think that's the best way to describe this. I would even compare it, John. You threw out Aaron Curry. How about Keith Rivers, where the Giants gave up a 5th-round pick, low risk, high reward, Keith Rivers injury plagued? I think you could definitely build parallels between both of those players.
I think Rivers is actually a much better example. I agree 100% because Rivers, when he was healthy, did have success in this league. But, you know, quite frankly, I think that the Beeson thing is probably even a little bit more of a flyer, only because Beeson's injuries are a lot tougher to recover from than I think what a lot of Rivers' injuries were. But still, again, it's a low-risk, high-reward. It's worth taking the chance on it. I'm assuming it's going to be a conditional 7th or a conditional 6th, which not a big deal, especially considering where the Giants are right now trying to make a move. But, you know, you wonder, you make a trade for Beeson now. There were some veteran linebackers available in the offseason. Maybe make a move then. He would have been on this team for a few games already. But the Giants make the move now after all their injuries. And, again, that's probably a big part of it here. They had Dan Connor. He went down. Jaquan's been battling a knee injury. He's still playing, but a lot of injury issues have come up, and this is probably a response to that.
Well, they have about, 15 guys on the injury report. It continues to grow left and right. Ooh. And the other thing to keep in mind, John, assuming this deal does go through, they have some roster moves they need to make because you have Beeson and Will Hill.
Well, Will Hill, I believe they don't have to make a move until Monday. Isn't that correct?
I believe you are correct. But if they want him active for Sunday and they want more than just 2 safeties, they're going to have to make a move before then.
Right, 100%. 201-939-4513. Also, the other piece of news yesterday I want to get to before we get to your calls real quick. David Diehl making the announcement after Tom Coughlin says, we'll see. David Diehl says, yes, you will. I'm starting at right guard for the Giants this week. So, obviously, that thumb got better over the course of the week, and he'll be playing right guard. I'm assuming Cordell's still going to be the center with Booth at left guard. I suppose they could put Boothie at center and have Brewer play left guard, but I think it's going to be the Cordell at center, Booth at guard configuration. So the Giants hoping that veteran presence on the right side between Pugh and Cordell will hopefully give them some help and make the Giants a little bit better inside.
Well, they need some stability on that offensive line. Getting Deal back in the mix certainly doesn't hurt. I was going to say Deal could potentially play center, but that's the one position he hasn't played over the course of his career. He's been just about everywhere else.
No question about it. Now, remember, Deal did not play particularly well either last year or in the preseason, but he was playing tackle then, also battling a number of injuries going back to last season with that knee. Best shape of his life this year, and I know he's very excited to get on the field, and hopefully all that hard work in the offseason and getting that thumb right will make him a very effective guard. And remember, he dropped a lot of weight. Maybe he can do some pulling and things like that to, you know, try to help this Giants offensive line run the football a little bit. 201-939-4513. Let's start and go all the way across the Pacific Ocean and say what's up to Victor in Texas. Victor, what's going on?
Oh, man, I'm the first in this shoot. Hey, what's going on?
You are leading off today, Victor.
You are setting
what's
the tone, Victor.
Well, I like to set the standard there, you guys. I appreciate it. Look, I was looking on Twitter and I saw this thing flash over basically John Beeson. And just like you said, John, I mean, it's nothing. The Giants are kicking the tires. They're trying to come up with some stuff. He might not even pass the physical. I don't know if he passed it or not yet, because I was excited for a second because I remember the old John Beeson, but then I came across all his injuries, the microfracture surgery, the knee injuries. But the one thing you can't actually put a medical, analysis on is his confidence to come out there and play. They said his confidence was shaken after that microfracture surgery. And we play in the NFC East, and playing with the Eagles, playing the Cowboys, the tight end is somebody that's actually been an issue for us. And putting him out in the field, I think, it'd be more of a liability than actually helping us. And, looking at what you said about signing a linebacker or somebody in the offseason, well, I remember them saying before, if they actually signed somebody, then they were on the roster at the beginning of the first game, they would have to guarantee their salary. Veterans,
correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's probably why the Giants didn't do that stuff, because they already salary cap ridden, and they didn't want to do that, so they waited till the season started to actually get people to sign them. And one more thing I want to talk about, too, is the offense. I read an article where Ralph Vacchiano basically was talking to Kevin Gilbride about his offense and how he's frustrated at how they're struggling and how, you know, he doesn't know what to do to change it, but, you know, he's not going to change too much because too much change could actually make it worse, and, you know, he just wants to make a little modifications. Well, I mean, you guys tell me, how is he going to modify this offense anymore when the offense is basically predicated on the offensive players reading the defense? That's what's kind of weird to me in the way this offense is. It's a give and take. You can have explosive plays if they read it correctly, or then if it's not, you can have interceptions, which Eli is going through this year. So talk to me about, you know, what do you think he meant by that, and do you see them being explosive this week?
Well, I think the one point Kevin Gilbride made, and I think it was a good one, is that you can't change your offense too much because you want to work and use the stuff that you practice all training camp and what the guys are comfortable with. So you've come out 1 week and all of a sudden you're replacing half a playbook. Guys are uncomfortable in it, and you're going to make route mistakes, and you're going to have turnovers, and you're going to have mistakes like that. So I think that's the point he was making there. As for adjustments, look, you can change the balance of the plays that you run. You can either maybe run inside more, run outside more. You can, you know, run different type of route trees. You know, and again, they make adjustments based on what the defense does, but you can still have 3-step drop plays, 5-step drop plays, 7-step drop plays. You can adjust your offense that way. So you have to me, and Lance and I talked about this on Tuesday, you have to keep the core of what you do in place. Because if you, in week five, you're trying to change the core of your offense and what it's predicated about, it's not going to work. You're not going to have success because it's just too much to change for guys to adjust to. So you could take your core and just tweak how you do it, the type of plays that you run, the 3-5-step drops, the tempo, things like that you can change around. But all that being said, Victor, and I think this is the point that Kevin Gilbride tried to make. One, it's very hard to call plays and be consistent and have a good rhythm. No problem. We are not hanging up on you, Victor. Don't worry about it. And
okay.
It's hard to get into a rhythm with play calling when you're going 3 and out every time. That's number one. And number two, unless these guys start playing better, receivers get separation, the offensive line starts to block, it's really not going to matter what plays you call, because every offense at its core requires your players to win their one-on-one matchups, and right now the Giants just aren't doing it.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you definitely bring up a great point in it, one-on-one matchups. I think Hakeem Nicks has lost a little step there, and he hasn't gained that full game speed back yet. But the tight end, to me, the tight end is something that was more of, on the lines of a security blanket for Eli. He had it with Kevin Boss. He gained it with Jake Ballard. Even he had it when Jeremy Shockey was here. I mean, he just doesn't have that right now. And I'm looking for a tight end. I thought it was Adrian Robinson because he reminded me of a sort of like a big Martellus Bennett type guy. But he just hasn't panned out. I mean, I guess he's injured.
Yeah,
but
there's
a tight end
yeah.
out there right now. There's a tight end out there right now that the Patriots let go. Zach
Sudfeld. He was back up
Sudfeld.
For Gronkowski.
He showed some promise. And I'm like, you know, maybe we can kick the tires on him. I mean, he's not going to be expensive. You know, and he actually showed some stuff out there in the field working with Tom Brady. I think he would, you know, would be a good addition to us. And as far as the offense is, what do you think about Kevin Gilbride? You know, maybe just like you said, those quick dump off passes, maybe a slant, a crossing route, or even moving the pocket with Eli, so they don't give these guys long. The offensive line doesn't have a long time to block.
Well, Victor, Victor, and thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it as always. Last week they did move the pocket a lot more with Eli, especially earlier in the game. There were a lot of quick boots. There were a lot of moving the pocket outside, and I think they did try to do that last week. But when it comes to the short passing, and we've said this before, yeah, you want to try to incorporate it. But when the defense knows they're getting to your quarterback and they know you're not going to have time to run those 5 and 7 step drops, what's the defense going to do? They're going to sit on the slants. They're going to sit on the swing pass. And quite frankly, when you have to leave in your running back and tight end to max protect, they're not going to be there to make those plays for one. But number two, the defense is going to be ready for it. How do you think the Chiefs got that interception on that quick out, the Panthers, excuse me, got the interception on that quick out in the third or fourth quarter against the Giants in week three? They knew Eli wasn't going down the field, so the corner, instead of following the guy deep, breaks off, comes in, steps in front of the short out pass on the 8 or 9 yard out, gets the interception, returns it for a touchdown. So it's just not – I know it sounds like it could be simple, but it just really isn't.
Well, you become even more predictable, John. Everybody's been talking about how Kevin Gilbride's entire offense is predictable. If you solely rely on these short passes, the defense is already going to have you read like the back of their hand, and they're going to step in front of routes, and they're going to have a perfect read on your entire offense. So you really need to mix and match. You need to work in some of the passes to the running backs here and there, but you can't have it every single play. That's the difficulty when you don't have enough balance on your offensive line to protect it. Vic brought up the fact that the Giants may want to explore an option of going after another tight end. The biggest issue with the tight end spot right now, and John, you touched on this, they need the tight ends to stay back and serve as a sixth offensive lineman. It doesn't matter if you bring in an all-pro tight end at this point. That's not going to solve your offensive woes. Once you get your protection schemes in check, then you will have the ability to send guys like Brandon Myers out to catch passes. But right now, they need Brandon Myers. They need Bear Pasco. They need them to stay on the line to serve as an extra blocker. And unfortunately, those two guys that I just named haven't even been able to block consistently. So until they work that out, talking about bringing in another tight end or getting these guys to run better routes is premature at this point. It's got to start with at the line of scrimmage. Get the blocking schemes right, then you can worry about what type of personnel you want to utilize down the field.
201-939-4513. I just read through that Ralph Vacchiano article, by the way. Very interesting. I think he's pretty fair about what tough spot Gilbride's as an offensive coordinator. I will disagree when he refers to the Giants' offense as being conservative by modern-day standards. And to me, just because you're not in a pistol and you're not doing a read option, that doesn't mean you have a conservative offense. I think you have to decide what the word conservative means to you. Because to me, conservative is running the football a lot, throwing a lot of short passes, not putting the ball in danger. Well, the Giants are trying to throw the ball down the field, though, folks. They're trying to make big plays. To me, that's the opposite of being conservative, regardless of the formation in which you start your offense in.
Well, and the formation you utilize, John, has to fit your quarterback. Eli Manning's not mobile, so of course you're not going to run the read option.
Exactly.
You can't judge the Giants based on that.
201-939-4513. Let's go to our phones and say what's up to Charles in North Carolina. Charles, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys.
How are you, Charles?
How are we doing, Charles?
I couldn't disagree with Victor Moore, man. Let me start off with the offense. John and Lance, y'all explained weeks ago that this team, the offense, is built off what the defense is doing. So it's not Gilbride right now. It's about the players executing and being on the same page. That's clear. Because if you're not on the same page as a wide receiver to the quarterback, the play is not going to be successful.
That's fair.
They can make adjustments on the fly according to what the defense is in the lineup of the defense, right? Ain't that what you guys said weeks ago?
Charles, no question about it. And real quick, think of it this way too. Victor Cruz has played really good football. He's having a big year. Maybe it's possible that maybe Nixon, Urban Randall just aren't winning their individual matchups as much as they need to.
Exactly. And this offense is going to move once we can block. I am so geeked up for this weekend, man. I'm glad Dale's in there. I think Snee wasn't right. He hasn't been right this season, man. And I've been looking at him. He hadn't seemed like he's the same Snee we've been seeing over the past few years, man. So I'm glad we got Dale in there. Hopefully Snee can come back and be healthy and be productive, but I'm glad Dale is in there. I got to disagree with Victor again. We're not just kicking the tires on John Beeson. I'm in Charlotte. Born and raised here. I've seen John Beeson from his rookie year to now. He's had a lot of injuries, but guys, you got to realize something. That guy's healthy right now. The thing about it is Ron Rivera said it 2 weeks ago when they beat us 38-0. Beeson is rusty right now because he didn't play but 6-7 games last year, or he hasn't played in the last 2 years.
Correct.
6-7 games, something like that. Rusty. The guy is not in football shape right now, or he's not quite there yet.
Well, in fairness, Charles, he should be in football shape by now. Maybe mentally he's not back yet, but he should be in football shape. He's had an entire summer in training camp to get ready for this season.
Well, we got to realize, too, I don't even think he played in preseason because they was nursed. He had a light preseason and light training camp because of his off-season surgery with the microfracture. So he had a light, you know, he didn't go out and go full blast in training camp, guys. Got to remember that. He's still trying to – they pretty much rested him and tried to put him out there for the season thinking, okay, he has some mental reps. He's getting some reps in practice. But we got to remember, man, this guy did not go full blast in training camp. He was coming off surgery. They kind of babied him a little bit in there. And his confidence is not shaking. We're talking about John Beeson here. If you guys have seen this guy play, the guy is not – he does not lack confidence when it comes to being on the field. He needs some reps. He needs some time to see. I love this trade, man, if he goes through, because right now he's better than Herzlick. We know that. Herzlick, I love you. Great story. You're not a starting linebacker. Rivers, the difference between Rivers and Curry and Beeson, why I think this is a different situation, is because Aaron Curry has been lost on the field since day one. Fans said it, coaches said it when he was in Seattle, when he was in Oakland. He was, like, lost. He was never in the play. He was always outside of the play. He always overran the play. He did it here in preseason. With Keith Rivers, he showed flashes of being good, but here it's been very pathetic looking at him the last two seasons here in with the Giants. He hasn't been very productive.
Well, Charles.
So other than Paysinger, which he's coming around. I'm loving that. I like the Beeson trade. I think he'd come right in and start. I think he'd be productive.
All right, Charles, thanks for the phone call. Greatly appreciate it. And I agree with you that Beeson is still trying to get reacclimated to the NFL because he was recovering from off-season knee surgery. And you could make the argument he used the first two games sort of as preseason games. However, if you're saying that he's not yet in football shape and he still needs to get back to form and you need to preach patience, the Giants are 0-4 the last time I checked.
Can't really have much patience at this point, can you?
You need an immediate impact player right now. So if the Beeson deal works out, you may see the results down the line, John, as Charles is saying, but time is ticking right now.
That's why it's a flyer. That's why you take the chance, you make the trade. Look, you know he's not going to help you this week. You wonder how much he's going to be able to help you next week as he tries to learn this defense. And look, you hope down the line he's better than what they have, which he could be if he gets back to being close to his old self. It's only a condition, you know, if the rumors are correct, it's only a conditional late round pick. So, look, you roll the dice to see what happens. But look, this is not, you know, Jesus coming down from the, you know, mountain with the tablets here, okay?
He won't be a savior.
Moses, excuse me, not Jesus. I got my biblical characters mixed up. My bad.
It's early.
It is early.
Give it some time.
I'm sorry. I strayed into the New Testament there. Sorry about that. 201-939-4513. 4-5-1-3. That wasn't even
Were there
close.
Draft picks involved in those biblical stories?
No, there were not. They made a deal. They traded the golden calf for the Ten Commandments. let's go Steve in D.C. Steve, what's going on?
Hey, what's happening, guys? Listen, I hope I can get like 30% of what those two guys got. First of all, I do agree with the last caller. You know, I really believe that, you know, we could potentially have, you know, a great player in Beeson. But that's really what not upsets me about the whole thing.
What's that?
You know, what really bothers me is the fact that we should have addressed this, you know, in the off season, because we're not going to have him where we would need him to be at this point in the season. That's the bottom line. You know, I mean, like you guys just said, it's probably going to be two or three games before he can, you know, get acclimated with the defense. And if it's a matter of getting in, you know, game shape or what have you. So you're figuring 3 weeks, and I don't know where we're going to be in 3 weeks.
That's fair.
You know.
It's fair,
you know,
Steve.
So,
it's fair.
But, you know, of course, I'm like, why are we messing with the defense when obviously we really need to be addressing the offense? I mean, let's face it, I'm not happy with the linebacker situation, but if we're going to kick the tires, or however you want to phrase it, it just seems as though we should be doing it with the offense. And, I mean, that's the most disturbing thing about it. You know, I would really like to say, I mean, you guys brought up some really great points. I really liked it. You enjoyed the last two callers. But I just want to say this, you know, ultimately, yes, I mean, you know, Reuben Randle and Hakeem have not been, you know, playing as we would like them. And I'm sure as they would like to. I really don't know if it's a matter of rhythm or what's going on with that. But I think it's more, we really need to really kind of say, let's face it, it's really more about Eli. This is Eli's team. This is Eli's offense. I love Eli. I think, you know, but the bottom line is this. Eli needs to be more. He's the one who's really calling the plays at the line, so it's on Eli.
Well,
and
Steve,
he knows who's playing well and who's not playing well. So,
Steve,
you know, ultimately, go ahead.
No, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just going to say, listen, I understand the point you're making about Eli, but it starts with the offensive line. And you mentioned about that they need to maybe make a move or two on offense. Keep in mind, they brought in Dallas Reynolds from the former Philadelphia Eagle, in terms of adding some depth on that offensive line. They're not going to bring a new receiver in at this point because they don't need a receiver. You may make the point they need a new running back to add some depth, but, you know, you're going to add a piece or two here. You're not going to add a drastic member to the mix that's going to completely overhaul your system or make an immediate impact. You need to at least keep that in mind.
And Steve, I think the other good point, Steve, is that we talked about three issues here. And that's why it's hard to really point the finger at one person when you're 0-4, especially on this offense. There's offensive line problems. Let's be honest, the running backs haven't been particularly productive. Whether that's offensive line related or not, I'm not sure. But they haven't been productive. Two of the three wide receivers haven't been what you wanted them to be. And the quarterback hasn't played well. So there's plenty of blame to go around here.
Absolutely. I just wonder about the psychology of the team, you know, more than anything. You know, first of all, when you bring a guy like Beeson, I don't really know what that's going to say to the rest of the linebackers. I mean, it's like, you know, dating some girl and it's, you see her new boyfriend and he looks way less than you. He's like, what's going on? You know, where does that leave your confidence? It's kind of shaking. Like, man, I thought I was a little bit better than that, but, you know.
That's never happened to Lance Meadow, so it's okay.
I can't relate to that story, Steve. I'm sorry.
I know, terrible analogy, but I hope you guys get my point, what I'm trying to say.
No, we got it.
I don't really know what you're going to say to the linebacker. I'm happy about pacing, and of course I'm happy about Dill being back. But, you know, I just think that Eli, of course, that, you know, he knows who's playing well. I just think he needs to get on those guys a little bit more. If they're, you know, if they're not, you know, performing, then he needs to call for somebody else. We do have a 53-man roster, so, I mean, it's, you know, ultimately – I know guys need to play better all the way around, but it starts and ends with Eli, as far as I'm concerned.
All right, Steve. Thanks
so
for the call, pal.
Call, guys.
You got it. Appreciate
it. Have a good weekend.
You too. 201-939-4513. Oscar is on Long Island. Oscar, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing?
What's up, bud?
Thanks for picking my call.
Hey, thanks for calling in.
Last caller said it all. I'll be honest with you. I like the trade. When anything can help out the team, I really don't care. Anything. Just, we need a spark. But my question is, we need help in the O-line. And honestly, we've been getting beat. Eli's been taking a beating. We can't run block. We can't pass block. Honestly, a lot of teams have done it this week. They've been trading to get offensive linemen. We're good enough. I believe that we're still good. We got the weapons that went to the Super Bowl. Why can't we just go out there, try to get one more offensive lineman, give up a second rounder, or give up a first? This team got the talent to take it again. They got the same talent they had before. We just need help on the offensive line. The the D-line got to step it up. They're not even – there's no pressure at the quarterback. Justin Tuck, I mean, with JPP, at least Kiwanuka's doing something, but there's no pressure.
Hey, look, Oscar, we talked about it all offseason long. The one thing the Giants wanted to get better at this offseason was winning the battle at the line of scrimmage and being more physical on both sides of the ball. And I think it's fair to say, so far, except for the play of the defensive tackles, which has been pretty strong at times, they haven't done either one.
And, Oscar, the other thing that I'm going to add to your point about why the Giants didn't go out and trade for an offensive lineman, because you're referring to Levi Brown being traded to the Steelers and Eugene Monroe being acquired by the Ravens, both of them are left tackles. You have Will Beatty, and you just locked up all that money in Will Beatty. So if you acquire one of these guys, what are you going to do with Will Beatty?
No, but we can go get a guard. You know, after Chris Lee's got hurt, we can go out there and try to get a guard. I mean, David Boss is hurt. You know, we got a center. That's cool. I like that. But we can use another guard with experience, you know?
Well, Oscar, I'm sure Jerry Reese has the radar up, but if these guys become available, I'm sure he's going to inquire about it. But you have to look at this from this perspective as well. You're 0-4 right now. And even if you acquire a guard like that, it's still a tall order, let's be honest, to make a run here and still get into the postseason. So the question is, even with that low percentage chance of turning the season around and getting into the playoffs, now they have a shot to do it, but it's not going to be easy. Do you want to sacrifice a middle-round pick to give you an extra 15% chance to get into the postseason?
Anything will work. It's tough, I know, man. But right now it's just so disappointing right now. And I still believe, like, yo, we could do it, you know?
Oscar, thanks for the call, man.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thanks for calling in.
Mathematically, they are still alive, but the bottom line is you don't just make moves for the sake of making moves, John.
It has to be a difference maker that can really put you over the top. And look, it'll help. The Giants certainly need help on the offensive line. We've been saying it all offseason, and all season. But look, you're 0-4. Is this really the time to trade future draft picks when we've talked about all season how the cupboard is a little bit bare behind your starters that are getting older? It's probably not the best idea.
Plus, even if you bring an offensive lineman from the outside, even if they're a polished veteran, John, they still have to learn the system. If you're going to get a guy to come in and make an immediate impact, it has to be from within. For example, like a David Deal. He knows the system. You hope he has some fresh legs. He's used to playing with the other four offensive linemen, and he can make an impact.
Brian Waters is the perfect example. The Cowboys bring him in a few days before the regular season started. It took him a good 3 weeks to get ready to play for them and really be a factor of guard. So it's a lot easier said than done.
Time is working against you right now from the Giants' perspective.
Dude, the clock's ticking.
You don't have the flexibility and the luxury of saying, hey, we're going to bring in a guy, we're going to get him ready in 2 to 3 weeks, and then he's going to come in and our season's going to turn around. By then, what happens if you're 0-7?
Tick, 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 tick. Let's go to Kendall up in Canada. Kendall, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Hey, I was going to do bold predictions, but I've got to talk a little bit about these signings and this other stuff.
I still want your bold predictions, Kendall, so be quick.
Okay. When they sign these people in, they're bringing them in because they need bodies there, right? Mm-hmm. The idea, like Lynn said a long time ago, your 53 is your 53. You're going to win it or lose it without that. So when you bring, like, the linebacker in, the reason they're bringing them in is the number one's gone, the number two has to move up. So you've got to get production from your number two. You're bringing the guys in case the number two goes down because you still got to play a game.
And this might also be the fact, too, Kendall, or maybe the guy they brought in from Seattle's practice squad, Bradford, hasn't worked out as well as they would have thought, so they want to go in a different direction there.
Absolutely. And the same thing with going out and getting another O-lineman. You got to remember, Deal's coming back, and same thing with running back. I heard someone talk about a running back. Brown's coming back in week 8 as well. And at the end of the day, I think everybody's wound up because we're 0-4, and there's still hope in the year. That's the problem. The problem is we still have hope, right? If we didn't have hope, then we could be talking about playing the young fellas, see what we have, retool for next year. But the problem is because the NFC least is so bad, at 0-4, you're still in it. Now, I'll be real quick on my bold predictions.
Yeah.
Okay? Because they worked out so well last year. JPP with 3, and he did get 55, so he was halfway there as far as Wilson goes.
Okay.
So here's my bold prediction for this week. Eli Manning, 450 and 4 touchdown passes.
Ooh.
And here it is on the defensive side. We hold Philadelphia to less than 100 yards rushing, including Vic and Shady McCoy.
Kendall, they're bold. I'll give you that.
Real bold.
They are bold.
Well, if you're going to do it, you know, at 4-0, what the heck do you got to lose?
It's a fair point.
The thing that I liked about this week, though, was I liked how the team came together. I liked how Justin Tuck was going to fight someone, how Roll was out in bombastic, easy for me to say, and going like 12-0. So I liked what they did this week. But at the end of the day, someone, I think it was Dottino said, or I can't remember whether it was Dottino or Anita or I heard it somewhere else, but basically for both of these teams, and this is what makes football so great, you're in week five, and for both of these teams, this is a playoff game.
Yes, it is.
Loser goes home.
No question about it. Kendall, we appreciate the call, man.
Thanks.
Have a good one. Hey, you know, that's a great point, and we brought this up earlier in the week. This is basically a must-win game for both these teams. You can't afford to lose a division game at 0-4 or 1-3, for that matter.
Well, and keep in mind, if the Cowboys somehow knock off the Broncos, and that's going to be a tall order for them, that even puts more pressure on the loser of this game between the Giants and the Eagles.
Fairly enough, is unlikely, and the Redskins on their bye week this week too, by the way. So that's something to keep an eye on. And I want to go back to his two bowl predictions. Better chance to me that the Giants get their 450 through the air from Eli Manning. I still don't think they're going to do it because that's a ridiculous amount of yards. But I don't know what kind of bet, quote-unquote, I can make here. But, dude, they're not holding the Eagles, Vic and McCoy, to under 100 yards rushing. It's not happening.
Talking about the number one rushing attack in the league right now.
And your two starring defensive tackles haven't practiced yet this week.
And your linebackers haven't been consistent enough, specifically off the edges.
And you're probably not going to be able to bring your safeties up to help in the running game because you have no healthy cornerbacks. So you're going to want help behind them in the secondary. So, Kendall, if you're right, I want you to call up on Monday, and you can laugh at me, and you can say, I told you so. But that is bold. The Eagles can run the football. That's one thing they can do. They spread you out, and they will run it, and LeSean McCoy is an unbelievable player. Second round draft. This is why when we get to draft time and people are like, oh, well, you had to pick this guy. You had to pick this guy. And I always make the point that it's an inexact science. You're making educated guesses on what these players could be, right? LeSean McCoy was the 21st pick in the second round. You watch him play football. How is he a second round pick? He's a monster.
Guys fall. They don't like the systems that they played in college. Sometimes that's a turnoff. There's a variety of reasons.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. That's why it's such an inexact science. And you do your best. You pick the guy you think fits best with your team in the NFL. And it's just, wow. It's unbelievable. 201-939-4513. By the way, every morning on Giants.com, we have a little morning debate on the website. You can go to Giants.com. You can poster your opinion about our particular question for that day. So you can join the debate now. Go to Giants.com. Today's question is what is Michael Vick's biggest threat, his arm or his legs? So make sure you go check that out.
You mentioned about the defensive lineman being banged up, and this is a question on Twitter regarding that.
Oh,
about
Twitter.
Whether
we haven't checked Twitter once today.
Jonathan Hankins or John Connor will be active and involved in the game plan. This is from our good friend A.J. Marshall. I would say, if Linval Joseph and Colin Jenkins don't suit up, very likely that Jonathan Hankins is going to be active for the first time this season. He's gotten plenty of practice reps. Tom Coughlin spoke highly of him. His fellow teammates spoke highly of him. This could be an opportunity for them to give him the green light and see what he's made of. As far as John Connor is concerned, I think another week of practice, he's understood the game plan, he's digested the playbook, there's probably an increase in the opportunities for him maybe to get out there as well.
Certainly possible. And look, Hankins is a guy that they drafted in the second round, a second-round pick, especially a defensive tackle. You'd like to get some production out of him in year number one. And quite frankly, it hasn't been his fault. The Giants just have a lot of good defensive tackles with a lot of NFL experience, from Patterson to Rodgers to Jenkins to Joseph. So there hasn't been a lot of room for him, but now he'll finally have his chance. I know he's excited about it. I talked to him in the locker room the other day, and he thinks he's ready. But, boy, It's a tough game to get going against. I guess, you know what, at least it's a type of offense I'm sure he saw in his college days, being obviously at Ohio State. He's seen this type of spread offense, so it should be something he's not completely unfamiliar with.
And he's used to playing multiple snaps, John, because he was pretty much out there for just about every play for Ohio State.
No question about it. And he'll be in a rotation this week. Hopefully the Giants will get Jenkins and Joseph back on the practice field today. We'll see. Both guys batting leg injuries, and I think Rodgers should be good to go on Sunday. He practiced on a limited basis yesterday. I think knee, Rodgers?
Yes,
hip?
Knee.
Knee,
I
right?
I think Rodgers was the knee.
I think knee. 201-939-4513. Big Ed is in Maryland. Big Ed, what's going on?
What's up, big guys? How are you doing today? We got Big Lance and Big John. How's it going?
What's going on, Big Ed?
Oh, man, I'm loving this, man. I'm loving this. Every chance I get a chance to talk to you guys and be online, I'm loving it.
Well, I appreciate you calling, Ed. We'd like to hear from you, baby.
All right, man. We're going to make it. You know what, John? I've been thinking, man. We need to pull my seven-man crew. It'd be me. It'd be you. It'd be Big Lance, Nita, Paul, and I think there's one, two other people missing.
Eisen? You want to throw Eisen in there?
Yeah, there you go, Mike. Yeah, there you go. Big Mike had to be in there, too. It was a seven-man squad for the Giants.com. I was thinking of that.
So I appreciate
you work
it.
Work on that idea and then let me know. All right? But let's get to this. All right. Bottom line, we got to shut down Shady McCoy. And the way to do that is keep him on the inside. We have to run on the outside. And then that's the other thing I didn't get a chance to say a couple weeks ago. We got to protect the outside. See, we're doing a great job of holding them inside. But as soon as they get to the outside edge, we are getting torched, and that's by everybody. That was by Dallas. That was by Denver.
That's fair.
And it was by, you know, and I was like, dang, is somebody not seeing this? Maybe I need to bring this up. So if you guys talk to them, talk to the coaches today, especially Perry, tell them to make sure that they're guarding the outside because they're forcing everything to the inside, which is great because of our tackles.
Well, Big Ed, here's the good news. Uh-huh. In order to try to switch things up, they're going to have Lance lead the offensive game plan meeting today. I'm going to lead the defensive game planning meeting today. We're going to get this all straightened out. Now that you gave me the answer, I'm going to bring it in there. We're going to get everything fixed, all right?
We have the ears of the players.
Mm-hmm. And the coaches,
right.
Of course.
Correct.
Oh, yeah, one little other thing. A glimpse from last week against Kansas City. When we tipped and blocked that punt, I saw our team rise up like I haven't seen them all year. And that was a glimpse of, ooh, if you can only just make a play on special teams to where we can at least get a good run back, or better yet, even block punt, and it will spark the energy. We have it. We just have to use it. And then people can't miss their blocking assignments. Bear, pass, go. Don't you ever miss a block again. Did you guys see that? He let him go right past him.
He did.
Just distraught. So it's all about blocking assignments. And then this is the biggest thing because I saw it last night, and I've been seeing it all season. If they're putting five to six or seven guys on the line but only going to rush four, block gap control. Because I think if you stay in there and block like what is that? Like, you know how we have the electronic football man? You know how you just put them in one line and they just block and maybe have one guy just shoot to the outside? The play could work.
Thanks, Big Ed.
Like, that actually works.
All right, Big Ed.
All right, guys.
Appreciate you weighing in.
Beat Philly. This is a beat Philly weekend. We must beat Philly.
All right, Big Ed. We love Big Ed. He's always very enthusiastic. We love Big Ed. Good to hear from him.
One of my favorite callers. Adds to this morning program. Absolutely.
And a couple good points. First, I want to bring up DeMontre Moore, who mentioned on that block punt. I bet you we're going to see him a little bit more on the D-line this week. It's just a gut feeling that I have. Nothing I've seen, folks. Got to be honest with you. I think we'll see him a little bit more in rotation. However, this might be a dangerous week to do it, and here's why. When you play against a team like the Eagles, they run some read option. Vic can run. McCoy obviously on draws and screens. You really need your defensive linemen to be disciplined in this game. As much as you need them to get after the quarterback, you need them to stay in their rush lanes like Big Ed mentioned, and you need them to be disciplined. And look, you put a rookie in his first game there, what is he going to want to do? He's going to want to get after the quarterback and kill him. And I'm afraid if you use Moore a lot in this game, the Eagles could take advantage of his aggressiveness And look, we've seen him make some mental penalties so far this year. So he hasn't been the sharpest in that regard. This might be a dangerous game to work him in, but I think he's getting to the point where the coaches are ready to use him more on the defensive line.
You could definitely see him over-pursuing time and time again. And I would even throw Jonathan Hankins in that department too, John. Not necessarily that he's going to be overly aggressive and try to get to the quarterback, but when you give rookies their first taste of the NFL, they want to go out there, they want to make statements, they want to make plays. You don't want to do that if you're sacrificing the overall defensive scheme.
A couple of Twitter questions. People having fun with Kendall's bold predictions. Victor in Texas is bold prediction. Brent Celek will have 125 yards and 2 touchdowns. And by the way, one thing to note this week, the Eagles tight ends don't have a ton of receptions. I think just like 16 combined between Celek and Ertz. Ertz, by the way, a second round pick and a very good young tight end prospect. They go down the field, though. I think Celek's averaging 18.5 yards per catch, and Ertz is over 20. So they like to get these tight ends down the field. The Giants will have to watch out for that. And then Randy brought up he doesn't care about DeMonte Moore's penalties, wants to turn him loose on the D-line. We talked about the dangers of that just a second ago. And John Killian says his bold prediction, Shady McCoy, goes for 150 yards, but he hopes Dunn go the distance. And that's a big thing this week, too, against Philly. Prevent the big play. They lead the league in runs over 10 yards and in passes over 20 yards. So they're a big play offense. The Giants have done a decent job this year of protecting against the big play, but that's paramount on Sunday.
However, the Eagles struggle in the red zone, only 42%. So you could give up the big play, but if you get to hold them to a field goal, at least that's somewhat of mission accomplished. One thing I did want to clarify, we were talking about this massive injury list. Sean Rogers actually dealing with a back injury, not a knee injury. It's hard to keep up with all of them.
Dude, it really is. It really is. It's really impossible to keep up with it. 201-939-4513. One other thing I think is funny. There are two players, one on offense, one on defense in the offseason that Giant fans want to get rid of that have been here a long time. Do you remember who those two players were?
Well, David Deal was one of them.
Yep. And now who's everybody's thrilled back in the lineup? David Deal. And who was the guy in, and who was the guy on defense?
On defense. Let me see.
Also injured right now.
Also injured. Right
Corey
now.
Webster.
Corey Webster, okay.
Right?
They were pulling to have a shakeup in the corner.
Correct. And now all of a sudden you need him a whole lot when you have all these corner injuries, don't you? We haven't gotten the calls like we have on Deal, but just pointing that out. 201-939-4513. It's funny how the carousel turns.
Well, that's what happens when you're banged up, John.
Right.
You want to go back to your usual suspects, the ones even that had some ups and downs over the course of their career, specifically last season.
Len does a good job of breaking things down into one little thing each week that he thinks the Giants need to do to win this game. I'm curious what his one thing is against a high-powered Eagles offense. Len's in Columbia, Maryland. Len, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. First of all, a quick serious question. Have
Sure.
you confirmed this trade with Carolina?
The Giants have not confirmed anything. We're just going off of media reports. If anything does get confirmed today, it'll be on Giants.com. But no, there is no confirmation on that John Beeson move. It is simply reports in the media.
Okay. Look, guys, let me warn you in advance. I'm going to be a little critical of the hosts.
I'm just going to hang up on you right now then, Len. See ya. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Although I must admit that I've been mollified a bit of your comments in the last 5 minutes.
Okay.
You know, we have some callers calling in with, you know, some ideas about what the goals. So we always talk about goals. We always say the coaches have goals and so forth. And you got everything that the callers are coming up with, which, listen, are legitimate things. You know, holding McCoy to 100 yards, you know, all that kind. And all you seem to do is to make fun of that. I mean, I don't get it. So let me give you, although you did say now, you know, the tackles have to maintain their lanes on defense. Let me start out in my analysis of what's going to happen on Sunday by saying the answer to your question on the website, what I'm most worried about is Vic's legs in the fourth quarter. Right?
Okay.
But here's my solution to that. Take his heart and his will away in the first three quarters.
By hitting him.
So that he's not willing to run on the fourth. When Michael Vick runs the ball, get hats on him. McCoy wants to gain 120 yards, 150 yards, catch passes left, catch passes right, and run down the field. Get hats on this guy.
Sure.
Flow to the ball and arrive angry on Sunday afternoon. Arrive angry.
Len, I agree with I agree with all of that. The only thing Lance and I were joking about it, you know, it's hard to hold a team under 100 yards rushing when they're averaging nearly 200 yards rushing per game during the season. You know what I mean?
You want to play the game on Sunday, John?
I do want to play the game, but look, okay. the Eagles are averaging 190 yards. They're still 1-3.
You don't sound like you want to play this game on Sunday.
The Giants have a great chance of winning Sunday.
Sunday.
Of course,
Let's talk about how to stop the Eagles. What's Perry telling the defense? Oh man, it's going to be hard to stop them. Look what they're averaging, 198 yards, on the ground in every game. This is really going to be tough, guys. Come on, how are we going to stop these guys?
Well, Len, I think we're going based on the track record. Number one, the Giants have struggled against the run somewhat this season, and I'm looking over LeSean McCoy's track record against the Giants. In the last four matchups, he's had over 100 yards in three of them.
And that's not including Vic's rushing, by the way.
Correct.
Listen, if McCoy gains yardage, punish him. Put hats on this guy. Punish him. I want to see this guy struggling to get off the ground in the second half of this game. All right? He wants to gain his yardage. You're going to pay for it, boy. You are going to pay for it. And the same with Vic. You want to run something up the middle, hold that ball with two hands? You better be looking to slide first because we're going to punish you. And you know what? I tell him that on the first play of the game. Come on, Michael. Come on, Michael. Come my way. All right? Listen, this is a great rivalry. There's only one thing that these two teams understand. Hammer each other.
Len's fired up today. I like it. This is as fired up as I think I've ever heard Len before. I love it.
Hey, listen. Let's go win this football game. That's the last thing I say to this team. Let's go win this football game.
Len, we'll see you on Sunday.
23-14 Giants. I'll be there, section 133.
There you go.
Noon.
Go get them, Len.
All right, Len. Thanks so much for weighing in.
I don't know if we've ever really angered Len before. I think it was me that got on this note.
Well, I think Len's always optimistic. I mean, that's nothing necessarily.
And look, just because we don't necessarily think the Giants are going to hold the Eagles as a team to less than 100 yards rushing, and I'll be honest, I don't think they will. That doesn't mean you can't go out there and win the football game. That doesn't mean you can't hit the, you know what, out of Michael Vick, like Len mentioned on that call. Doesn't mean you can't force him to fumble a few times. By the way, Michael Vick, more fumbles than any other active player in the NFL. So you can get after him. You can force turnovers. All that's true. You can make LeSean McCoy earn every yard and make him pay for every yard that he gets. All that's true. And look, holding him to under 100 yards is a bold prediction. I think that was Kendall's point. I just think it's going to be a very difficult thing to do. That's all I'm saying.
Every week we break down the keys to the game, and I shy away from looking at what we see on paper and all of a sudden assuming that it's going to play out that way, John. That's another factor that you need to take into consideration. Let's look at it from an offensive perspective. What were we talking about leading up to the Panthers game?
Bad secondary.
Giants are going to line them up through the air. What happened?
They couldn't get a pass off because they couldn't block anybody.
So there you go. Kansas City also had a banged-up secondary. Brandon Flowers didn't play. That was an attractive opportunity for the Giants in terms of matchups. What happened? Outside of the Victor Cruz long touchdown, I don't remember seeing big passing plays in that game.
Alex Smith, most sacked quarterback since 2011. How'd they do rushing the passer last week against the Chiefs?
Not very well. So we're going based on the trends, and we're looking at the numbers, and we're putting things in perspective. It's hard to get excited based on what the Giants have put out there over the first four games.
Hey, look, and the Giants have an excellent opportunity to win this game. It's not like they're playing a 4-0 team here. They're playing the Eagles. They're 1-3. They have their own problems. Talk about turnovers. Talk about inability to score in the red zone. Their defense has allowed more yards than anybody. This could be a get-well game for this offense, no question about it. But I do believe it's going to be more of a high-scoring game. To me, the Giants are going to have to score 24 points in order to win this football game. To ask them to hold the Eagles to under 20, I think, is probably asking a lot, considering the playmakers on their offense. The offense has to put up 24. Can the Giants' offense put up 24 points? They haven't the last 2 weeks. We'll see.
Well, the reason they're also going to have to put points on the board, John, is this is going to be a game where the Eagles are going to wear down potentially this Giants defense. What, 2 minutes 19 seconds is the average scoring drive for the Eagles of their 18 this season?
Yeah, very, very quick scoring team. You can't rest. They run that in the huddle. That being said, though, in time of possession, they're last in the league. They only average about 25 minutes per game. The Giants, I think, right next to them, to be honest with you, in that time of possession category. But they're not on the field a whole lot, the offense, and that's something the Giants' offense can take advantage of if the Eagles' defense gets worn down in the second half of these games.
Well, the Eagles' defense, once again, on paper, has not been very effective. They moved to a 3-4 scheme. They have not been able to stop the pass. They've not been able to stop the run.
Yeah.
A lot of gaps have opened up when you look at how this Eagles' defense has performed against their first four opponents.
And there's also a lot of evidence, too, when you take a look at it, that the Eagles' offense itself gets tired in the third and fourth quarters of these games. Their production in the fourth quarter is not what it is earlier in the game because their offense goes so quickly, they don't rest a lot, and guys get a little weary. LeSean McCoy's had 20 carries a game. I mean, I'm not sure he can last the season running the ball as much as he is.
Well, the Eagles are the complete opposite, John, of the Denver Broncos. The Denver Broncos are a strong second-half team. They'll light up the scoreboard.
Right.
The Eagles actually get outscored heavily in the second half. This may be a game where you don't necessarily need a strong start. You just need to maintain your tempo so that when you get to the third or the fourth, you're able to execute.
Though with the Giants' psyche, you would like them to get a lead here. They get behind. Who knows? You know, things start going on. You're 0-4. Oh, we're losing again. And, you know, that could screw you up in the head a little
bit.
I'm
trying to take Len's philosophy here, a little silver lining.
Of course, no doubt about it. The second half could be the Giants' half in this game, where they have struggled a lot this year, especially their first drives of second half. We went through that the other day. 2-3 and outs, I think a fumble for a touchdown and an interception. So it's been ugly. 201-939-4513. Mike is in New York. Mike, what's going on, pal?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
What's up, Mike?
Doing well, Mike. What you got?
I think what we should do is pick up Len and throw him in there at middle linebacker. What do you think?
I'm not sure Len's ready to play. Len might be ready to give the motivational pregame speech, though.
All right. What I really wanted to call in about, I want to give Gilbride credit because we've been ripping on him for a long time, and I think he made the adjustments necessary last game to keep Eli upright. But what I didn't like is he keeps trusting these tight ends to block. I mean, we knew from the first preseason game, Brandon Myers can't block. No, none of these guys can block.
Well, here's the problem. Who else do you want him to put there to block? He can
only use
the personnel that he has.
I think he should just slap an eligible jersey on a lineman and just have a straight-up blocking tight end. Don't even try to trick around about it.
Well, you know what? That might be something they end up having to do if the blocking of that tight end position continues to be what it is.
Yeah, and then the other thing is Tom Quinn. He was here for the Matt Dodge thing. He's had two punt returns in the last year. We went from number one in special teams last year to being the worst in the league so far this year. And looking at that special team squad, seeing how weak they were, I think he should have fought for Kyle Bosworth to stay longer. I mean, it must have been a roster issue, but we could have used that special teams demon.
Well, I mean, he could have fought for Kyle Bosworth. I'm not in that meeting when they're doing those cuts.
No, of course.
But in the end, let's be honest, Tom Quinn's a pretty small voice in that meeting when you have Tom Coughlin, you know, Jerry Reese,
yeah,
and you know, Sternfeld in there deciding who's going to be on this roster.
Mike, it's a numbers game.
True.
You needed some depth at other positions. You couldn't afford the luxury of keeping
Bosworth. You had so many offensive line injuries at that point, you had to keep an extra lineman.
Yeah,
you lost Andre Brown. You needed an extra running back.
Great
there was
point.
A lot of things that added
Yeah,
up.
Because Bosworth could have been on that roster instead of Darrell Scott if Andre Brown doesn't get hurt.
That's true. And I guess the last thing is we keep talking about David Wilson in space, but it turns out he's a lot better between the tackles. He has 21 attempts for 113 yards and a 5.4 average inside the tackles. And outside the tackles, he has 17 attempts for 17 yards. So I think we should just keep him in there and let him squeeze out and break it out.
Well, part of that, I think the blocking at times has been a little bit more effective inside as opposed to off the edges, because the problem is on the runs that David Wilson has run to the outside, as you just alluded to, Mike, the tight ends haven't even been effective blocking, so that's why he can't pick up the extra yard.
I'm just throwing ideas out there. Otherwise,
appreciate it.
I think we can stop McCoy, maybe not under 100 yards, but we stopped Jamal Charles pretty well until the end of the fourth quarter. And the other thing is spy Vic, because he will run on us, and we just seem to lose the quarterback. I mean, Alex Smith looked like he was a running quarterback last week, and he's okay.
Alex Smith does not hesitate to run, and Mike, appreciate the phone call. Michael Vick is the type of quarterback, listen, if he has no options down the field, he can't drop it off to the running back, he'll take off and run. He's averaging nearly 9 yards per carry this season.
8.8, and he will hold the football, too. He will hold the football. The Giants should be able to get some sacks this week. They really should.
You hope. You hope that the pocket collapses and they're able to get to the quarterback. One other thing that I wanted to throw out, piggybacking off of Mike's point, he mentioned that the Giants kept Jamal Charles intact for the most part on the ground. Correct. How about the fact that he also had 5 receptions for 62 yards and a touchdown, and now you have LeSean McCoy, who is a similar style running back. So, fine, you want to say that you stop McCoy on the ground? How about stopping McCoy out in the flat? Because McCoy's a guy that can easily get 6 catches for 70 yards and have a touchdown. So it's a dual threat that you're dealing with for the second consecutive week. You need to contain him from multiple facets, not just one. They've got to be careful with what LeSean McCoy can do out of the backfield.
201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Adam's in Ohio. Adam, what's going on, pal?
Hey, how's it going? First time calling in. I got to work from home today. Looking forward to it.
Oh, excellent, Adam. What's going on? Thanks for calling.
Let me say, I think your estimation of 24 points is pretty liberal in terms of both what we can do and what we need. It's no secret the Eagles can score.
Right.
It's also no secret they can't defend.
Right.
I'm still holding out optimism for the team that posted 31 points in the face of 6 turnovers in week one.
That's fair.
That fourth quarter rallies where Eli just decimated the Cowboys over and over just came up a little short at the end. But you made a point a few callers ago that I thought was pretty interesting. Is do you want to bolster by 15% the playoff chances in the face of giving up a potential second, third round pick? And I would submit that the answer has got to be yes. I think this is a team that epitomizes the notion of however we manage to get into the playoffs, now we're a legitimate Super Bowl threat. Whether we come from, 12-4 or 7-9, we're all 0-0 once the playoffs start. I think the other thing you got to do is overlap that player you secure with what you would have gotten in a draft. So you kind of find the best of both worlds. But here, I think you got to go with fortifying the offensive line so you can catalyze your offense and reciprocate the favors the defense has been giving you all season long.
Well, if you're going to fortify the offensive line, though, keep in mind it needs to be a position of need. You don't just bring in a left tackle for the sake of bringing in a left tackle when you already have a guy that's locked up for a lot of money. You just signed Kevin Booth. So you need to be smart at least what offensive lineman you would target.
And again, I agree. You do need to improve the offensive line here, no question about it. But again, do you want to trade a draft pick that could turn into a good young offensive lineman next year for a veteran that – who knows how much he's going to help you bring him in midseason, you're already 0-4.
Well, I think that's an interesting point. But then you also go back to the point that LeSean McCoy was, the 27th pick in the second or third round. I think the draft is more of a roll of the dice than a proven veteran.
Which is fair.
That veteran exist?
No, you're right. And look, I don't know if that veteran is available that can be had for a draft pick, and you're right. Look, just look at the Giants' experience drafting linemen the last 3-4 years. It's not great. Will Beattie's really the only guy they've gotten, and we'll see about Justin Pugh, obviously, that's really been able to contribute in a serious way. So, Adam, I think you make good points.
And, Adam, appreciate the phone
call. Let me ask you.
Yo.
Yeah, real quick, go ahead.
Yeah, let me ask you this. What do you think the time frame is or the likelihood of getting any defensive contributions from Allen Bradford? He looked pretty nice on special teams last week, but, obviously he's got to learn the defense, but he's a gifted player.
Well, Adam, I got to be honest with you. If this Beeson thing does come to pass, remember, Beeson used to be a middle linebacker. I would not be surprised if Mr. Bradford is let go or maybe he's put over to the practice squad. Though, wait, hold on a second. I take that back. Positions popped in my head. When you sign somebody off another team's practice squad, I believe you have to have them on your roster for X number of weeks before you can let them go. I believe that's a rule. I think it's 4 games, if I'm not mistaken. So they would not be able to make that move quite yet. Adam, appreciate the call, man.
Hey, thanks, guys. Enjoy the show.
Thanks, man. 201-939-4513. I think it's 4 games. It could be 6. And I guarantee you, one of our Twitter guys, I guarantee you, it's going to be either Marwan Ali, who's always on top of it, or it's going to be our guys over at NYG Cap Central that's going to have that rule for me on Twitter. I'm counting on you guys. At Giants Gab had a very good tweet, and this is something I want to touch on a little bit that we haven't quite yet. We've talked about it on our other web video shows. The Giants right now, 11 of 48 on third downs. Opponents are 30 of 60. Much better on third down for Giants opponents. And where that really comes down to, folks, is what teams are in terms of down and distance. Right now, 60% of Giant third downs are 10 yards or more. 29 of their 48. 14 of their 60 on defense are of a 10 yards or more. That's only 23%. So the Giants are in a lot of third and longs, and their opponents are not in a lot of third and longs. And another stat that I know Giant fans will not like. Giants, by the way, stopping third downs, they have allowed opponents to go 7 of 7 on third and ones, which is not a good number. And how about this one? Opponents' third downs, between 11 and 15 yards, they've converted 5 of 7. It's terrible.
Well, they're dead last in third downs from both sides in terms of converting on offense and making stops on defense.
It's hard to win that way.
Not a good ranking to have.
201-939-4513. But again, the results on third down is reflective of the job you do on first and second down, and that's the thing.
I've got the practice squad rule.
What do you got?
You were close in terms of the length of time.
It's 6?
If a team signs a player off another team's practice squad, that player takes up a roster spot for his new team for at least 3 weeks, bye week included.
3 weeks. And I believe this is the third week that Bradford's here, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I believe you are correct about that.
That sounds right. We can look it up.
Around the Panthers game.
Either way, though, if this Beeson thing happens, I'm not sure you're going to have both Bradford and Beeson on this team. Though Bradford is a better special teams player, I'm not sure how much Beeson could do on special teams with his injury issues.
Well, I throw out the Will Hill situation. And granted, you don't need to bring him back till Monday,
let's
say.
You get him back.
But you still need to bring him back at one point.
Really good point.
You don't have the luxury to keep that much depth.
201-939-4513. Dennis in New York. Dennis, what's going on?
Yeah, how you doing? My question is this. You know, they beefed up the defensive interior line. It seems like, you know, the speed's gone on our defense. I don't know if it's because the linebackers are all suspect right now or what, but it seems like, you know, by the time the fourth quarter comes around, we're gassed. I mean, it seems like the speed of the defense has slowed down.
Well, Dennis, what I'll say, Dennis, is that the strength of this team has always been the defensive ends, right? And we just, frankly, haven't seen the type of plays from those guys, and that's where you're going to have a lot of your speed up front.
Yeah. Well, that's what my concern was. I didn't know because they got so big in the middle. They're supposed to be there to stop the run, I guess. That's why they beefed it up. But this doesn't look – it looks like everybody's hitting the outside, like you said, too. It's not like everybody's going up the gut on us. And I was just wondering if that's – you know, I think that's what kind of the problem was. The defense had slowed down. I understand, you know, our defensive ends are always – have always been real, real fast. But it seems like the defensive line, by the time the fourth quarter comes, with gas, we're getting ran all over. I don't know.
Yeah, remember this, though. Colin Jenkins, who plays defensive tackles, is one of the more athletic defensive tackles in football. He can play defensive end, too. So I don't think the size of defensive tackle is hurting your run defense in any way. If you're going to run outside, you're not going to expect your nose tackle at 300 pounds to track that guy down. That's going to be your DNs, and that's going to be your linebackers, and those guys haven't made enough plays.
I think that's the problem, maybe in the linebacker core. I don't know. It's tough to watch, though. I know that because they look like they were going to be so good this year. I just don't know what's going on. But start 0-4, everybody's thinking it's over. I'm hoping it's not. So we'll see, huh?
Appreciate it. Thanks for the call, Dennis.
All right, thanks.
201-939-4513.
Relating to the point that Dennis mentioned, it's actually hard to believe that these defensive ends could even be tired late in the game, John, because they have so much depth at that position to rotate. You would wonder why these guys are getting tired, if that is something that people are seeing in terms of a trend.
You have five guys for two positions. I mean, Justin Chouteau has played a bit this year. I mean, he's been on the field.
You have Kiwanuka.
Demontre Moore sitting there, too. And Jenkins could play in. And they've even played a little 3-4 here or there over the course of the season. So,
I mean, that to me is inexcusable.
Granted, they've been on the field a lot. The Giants, again, one of the worst teams in terms of time of possession. They faced a lot of plays this year. We've seen that. So that's a little bit more understandable, but they have enough guys to rotate where these guys should be able to be fresh. And it's funny, I was talking to one of the guys upstairs the other day. The list of really good left tackles the Giants have played so far this year is really off the charts. Think about it. They start the season, you get Tyron Smith, one of the best young left tackles in the league. Then you get Clady in Denver, one of the best young left tackles in the league. Jordan Gross, not a great left tackle, but very good. Brandon Albert, Kansas City, one of the young, really good offensive tackles in the league.
That's a good point.
And what are you getting this week? You're getting another one. One of the best left tackles in football. So I know JPP's production has been that. I'm not making an excuse for him. The Giants have played a ridiculous group of left tackles that are all excellent football players.
But then again, you can't really point to that so much because take, for example, every team in the AFC West, John, they've got to deal with Clady and Albert two times the year.
So that's fair.
Eventually you have to rise up and beat good talent. But it's a fair point. They have been well tested based on the left tackles who protect the blind side of their respective quarterbacks.
And JPP trying to get back from that back injury, maybe that a little bit to do with his lack of production. Now, Jason Peters, who went healthy, and he hasn't been healthy much the last couple years, but he's healthy this year. He's one of the best left tackles in football. John is down in Florida on the phones at 201-939-4513.
Hey, guys. Great show.
Thanks, John. Appreciate
here's
that.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
I notice a lot of guys on the sidelines, like, throughout the game. They're sitting down, just, you know, I don't know if they're taking breaks or whatever. But can Coughlin make them earn their seats through execution?
What do you mean?
What do you want to do, stand the whole game?
Well, not the whole game, but I mean, like, you know, if you make a play, if you make some execution, you earn your seat. And otherwise, you know, be on the sideline, you know, rooting on the team.
Quite honestly, John, I think if he tried something like that, I think you would have a lot of issues with player-coach relations. Look, you're playing a game. You're playing your rear ends off. You're not on the field. You want to be able to sit down the rest of your legs. And if you start punishing guys and you make them stand, you're going to get them annoyed, for one, and you're probably going to hurt their production later in the game if they have to stand the whole time. So I don't think something like that's the answer.
Okay, well, I see your point. But I just thought maybe, like, you know, you could use that as, like, you're building a bridge, you know, theme. Like, you could do, like, a stand-up type thing. But I see your point.
Well, keep in mind, John, you got JPP and Sean Rogers dealing with back injuries right now. I think the last thing they need to do is stand if they can't get to the quarterback.
Maybe they can lay down, stretch out the back.
Right.
You know, like Larry Bird used to do that.
The other thing I wanted to bring up was the defensive line. When they're not going to get to the quarterback, they need to get their hands up and, you know, bat the ball down. I can't remember the last time I've seen balls batted down.
That's fair. I can't argue that.
I believe that would help this week, you know, because we're not always going to get there.
No, it wouldn't. Look, Michael Vick's not the tallest guy in the world. And, John, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. We're going to try to get through the rest of the calls pretty quick here. We're running out of time. It's already 10:40. But, look, Vick can get his passes deflected in the line of scrimmage. And that's something we've seen this Giants defense line do well in the past. But he's right, not a whole lot this year.
No, especially against Manning, who you think gets rid of the football quicker than any other quarterback. And you would say, hey, put your hand up, get a deflection, maybe get a tip ball, an interception. The only play that I can think of, John, this season where the defensive lineman did a good job getting back in coverage. excuse me.
Whoa, don't get all chucked up about Justin Tuck going in coverage, Lance. Wow, are you okay, buddy? Wow, Lance is losing it over here, folks. He's thinking of Charlie from Portland, Maine again. He's getting all, you right now? I know, he's still not okay. 201-939-4513. Oh, man.
Oh, boy, I think I'm still alive now. I said Justin Tuck had an interception in coverage in the preseason. That's what I was going to allude to. My apologies to the listeners here. I'm losing it. Getting all emotional over the fact that the Giants can't get their pass rush going, apparently.
201-939-4513. Take a sip of water. Relax.
I will. Thank you very much.
Let's go to the phones at Andrew's in Stanhope, New Jersey. Andrew, what's going on?
Not too much. Some other callers alluded to it. It was before the 07 Super Bowl. They were having a bad year, and my friend said it best. The Giants had lost, and I had said to him, the only thing good about that game, he said, well, there was nothing good. And I said, well, it was good because then you don't have hope anymore, you know, when they lose. So it could be, even if they lose, then you won't have a false hope that they're going to make the playoffs.
No, Andrew. No, we don't want to go through that here.
Definitely not.
You want to play as well as you can. You want to win football games. And from a completely selfish perspective, there's no way that anybody around here wants to be in the building at 0-5 and 0-6 and 0-7. I mean, honestly, I've never worked with the team when they've had a down year like that. I wasn't here for that last year of Jim Fossil. I can only imagine how tough it is. So, and look, I know what you're saying. And from a fan's perspective, I do know what you're saying. But look, you got to get back on the winning track here. You got to start winning some games, and you got to start getting some good positive feelings going through that locker room and getting through this building.
I agree. And I was just saying, losing could bring the next. They might then draft the next Eli Manning and Chris Knee. But I definitely want them to win. And my question is about the offensive line.
Yeah.
When Booth was a rookie, they also drafted another guy who has a name like Gronkowski, but not that exact name, and he's on New England now. But they would come in once in a while and play like two series or three series, and they would really do well power blocking. So I know you want consistency in the offensive line, but what about, rotating in like James Brewer and Cordell for a series or two series or maybe even three series just to give Snee and Boss a breather so when they do go out there, they're fresher.
Well, Andrew, quite frankly, this
dominating, that might help them.
No, I hear you. This thing has been so desperate, though, to get healthy and continuity in the offensive line. Mm-hmm. I don't think at this point you want to continue moving guys around if you finally have the guys healthy where you want them on the field.
Andrew, they have a hard enough time getting five guys to learn to play next to one another for
right.
just a series of four or five plays.
And they only had one backup last week. Who are you going to rotate in?
You're right. It's a two game. I'll let you guys go. Sorry to bring you down with my first comment. It's a two games to win, Philly and Chicago, and they're on their way to compete with Dallas for the title, for the division title.
I appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Guys.
Thanks, Andrew.
All right, Andrew.
Len's foaming at the mouth here. He doesn't want to hear about this. It's better have no hope thing. Come on now. Getting into a dark place. We don't like that.
And you also need to take into consideration the media coverage.
Oh,
now, the
yeah.
players don't want to be answering questions about when are you going to get your first win, how is team chemistry in the locker room.
Is the coach going to get fired?
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to get all those questions that nobody wants to hear.
Not good.
Not good. Not good. So I'm thinking now I should make you stand for the rest of the show since you had your little coughing fit.
Yes, I know. I should be
punishment.
Punished in some capacity.
Yes.
I regrouped, bounced back. It was one of those things, you know, something went down the wrong pipe. I got emotional, got worked up, and we're here again.
201-939-4513. Drew's in D.C. Drew, what's going on, pal?
I just want to know why at 0-4 they are looking at trading for a guy that was beat out by Chase Blackburn who they let walk.
No, I think
we're looking.
Drew, you're right.
We're looking at, like, at this point, it looks like we're going to have a top draft pick anyway. I mean, there was guys like Kasim Green sitting in the fourth round this past year. I don't get the logic behind that.
No, you know what? And Drew, it is a little bit curious because they could have tried to address the linebacker issue with a veteran a lot earlier in the game. And, look, Beeson, we talked about his issues. He got beat out for his job by a guy that the Giants let go and chose not to re-sign in the offseason. So I think there are some curious aspects to it. But I guess they think he has something left, playing, getting a few more games under his belt. Maybe he can look a little bit like the old John Beeson. You know, and in the end, it might just be a conditional pick where if Beeson doesn't show you enough and he doesn't meet those conditions, the Giants might not have to lose a draft pick at all. So I guess in that way, it's a very low risk, and I guess they think the reward is potentially high enough that it was worth making the deal.
Cool. Do you think, too, that there's any chance that they start trading off like a guy like Hakeem Nicks? If they offer him a deal and he doesn't look like he's going to sign, if they were to lose this weekend, do you think there's a chance they start listening to offers for guys?
Not yet. I think as you get closer to the trade deadline, maybe you start thinking about things in that regard. If you know you're not going to go and re-sign a guy after the season, you think about it. The Lions, if you remember, did that with Roy Williams. They traded him to the Cowboys midseason right before his contract year. I mean, do I think it's likely? No. If I had to bet, would they do it? No. Is it something I'm sure that the Giants will look at if they're sitting there at 0-6? I think maybe it's something they'll take a peek at to see what they can do.
Cool. All right. Thanks, man.
Appreciate the call, man. Thanks so much.
I don't think they're at that standpoint where they want to all of a sudden
start
getting rid of guys. But
this isn't
if
baseball.
It gets to that point,
this
yeah.
isn't baseball at the trade deadline where people just start jettisoning players.
And the Giants, I don't think, should be in any rush locking up Hakeem Nicks because we've been talking about these first four games. He needs to still prove that he can be a consistent every down wide receiver and show an opportunity to come up with big plays. Right now, mentally, he's having some lapses here or there that is hurting this offense.
And quite frankly, he's had some balls that he could have caught and he hasn't caught them, which is something you've never seen from Hakeem Nicks before. He has some of the best hands you'll ever see.
And you can't point to health anymore. He put that knee and ankle injury behind him. It's a matter of now going out there and making plays, getting on the same page with Eli Manning.
Now, we did a little bit of a change in the guard here. I'm a very busy guy. So we've had Lance now. Now he'll be keeping track of these picks. So I'm going to let you lead this pick segment now, Lance. Go ahead. And you get to set the stage now. You have a better record than me. This is like your dream
come true. Well, I've got to get the email up first. You caught me off guard here because I want to go through all the records since finally you actually are not atop the standings. I know it's so rare for you. You've had trouble digesting that news.
I feel very lonely. Well, while you bring up the email, let me go through a couple of
Well, I have it up here.
Tweets here. Hold on. NYG Cap Central. Bradford is still practice squad eligible. He spent 2011 and 2013 on the Seattle practice squad. Just pointing that out. Let's see. So Bradford could potentially be a third-year practice squad player, which is the limit for any player. See, he's always on top of that stuff with that. Always does a good job. And we got the rule, of course, it's 3 games before you can let him go. So,
well, 3 weeks to be three more specific, because the bye could be included in there. You don't necessarily need to have him for 3 games.
Very good. Go ahead, Lance.
All right, so here's the picks standings. You have Paul DeTino setting the tone right now at 17-8.
I got to tell you, though, he did really good last week, and I'll give him credit. I believe he went 6-1 in last week's games, but early on, he used a lot of tricks and cheesy games to pick some easy winners.
The gimme games. Yeah. That's what he took.
He picked Denver over Oakland last week. Let me put it that way.
He tried to out-scheme you. That's essentially what he did.
Well, he made me input certain rules that prevented him from gaming the system.
Well, you had to put your foot down.
And now he will slowly seep down to the bottom of the standings where he belongs.
Dan Salamone, 15-10, tied with moi for second place, it should be noted. Anita Marks, 13-12, in third place. John Schmelk at 11-14, 3 games below 500, it should be noted. And Nile at 10-15.
You know, I had Houston last week. I felt so good about my pick.
Good position.
At 20-3 at halftime, and then I had to watch them throw that game away. Matt Schaub. By the way, if anybody thinks Matt Schaub's a better quarterback than Tony Romo, you're out of your mind, by the way. I've had this argument with a few people this year. It's not even close. Matt Schaub is asked to do very little as starting quarterback of the Texans. Whenever they need him to do more often than not, he comes up short. Just say.
He's had costly turnovers. They've been leaning on their running game every single season.
For some reason, I've been sucked into a Matt Schaub is better than Tony Romo debate 3 or 4 times
Has
in the last 2 or 3 weeks.
Has that been on the national scene?
I don't know. For some reason, we've had a couple of top 10 quarterback list discussions. This is just offline with people just generally in like real life. And for some reason, people have asked me this question, and it's a weird question to me, and I don't know if it just popped in my head.
I think Matt Schaub's got a lot of room for improvement.
Yeah, no
considering the Texans were considered Super Bowl contenders, and look at the position they're in right now.
All right, so let's go through the games we got this week then, okay?
So we have Seattle at Indianapolis as our first game. 4-0 team against a 3-1 team.
Well, I'm going to keep riding the fact that Seattle is not the same team away from home, and they could have lost to Carolina in week one. They should have lost to Houston last week.
They still keep winning, though.
But I'm going to go with Indianapolis. I'm going to keep going down this same path. I think Indy wins against Seattle at home. Seattle, I believe, is actually road favorites in this game. And I think Indy will do enough to win the football game. They'll have more balance with the running game with Trent Richardson. Andrew Luck is an improving quarterback. I'm not a big fan of how they've changed their offensive system. It's gone way too conservative, in my opinion. They don't throw the ball down the field nearly as much as it did last year with the former Stanford offensive coordinator reuniting with Andrew Luck. I'm not a big fan of their system, but I do believe the Colts are a pretty complete team. I think they beat Seattle at home.
And I agree with your point. I think that's very valid. They're not explosive.
No.
When you look at Indianapolis' offense last season, they had T.Y. Hilton going deep, Reggie Wayne, they even worked down the field. That's lacking this season. I don't see it.
And especially now that they have a power running game, it's the perfect opportunity to run play action and get the ball down the field. I don't get it.
I'm going to go with Seattle. I'm not buying into the fact that they're a different team on the road. Listen, they've rallied in both of those games against Carolina and Houston. They've gotten some key touchdowns late.
And you could probably figure out why I'm a little upset about the offensive system of the Colts. Andrew Luck, fantasy quarterback, starter.
Yes. See, we're connecting the dots
here.
There's always something deep inside this argument.
Well, in the end, it's always all about me.
Oh, of course. Well, you know, if you can't pat yourself on the back, then there's no point in continuing the discussion.
Very true.
So we differ on that, so that's good. So there's an opportunity for you to fall further in the standings. The other good matchup, which is also a 4-0 against a 3-1 team, Saints are heading to Chicago to play the Bears. Bears coming off a loss to the Lions.
The Saints have played well this year, better than I thought. Rob Ryan, I didn't think he did a very good job with the Cowboys defense when he was in Dallas, but he's done a pretty good job with the Saints defense. That being said, I think Chicago at home, coming off a bad loss to Detroit. New Orleans playing on grass, slow them down a little bit. I'll take Chicago in this game in a little bit of an upset.
I actually like the Bears, too. I think this plays right into the hands. Drew Brees is not nearly as effective as a quarterback when he's outdoors as opposed to in the confines of a dome.
And Soldier Field is grass, though, right? They haven't changed at the field turf.
I don't remember them changing.
I'm
I mean, they're
sure
old school from what I last checked.
Jay
Cutler, the problem with him is he's been turnover prone in his most recent game. Prior to that, he was good. He had 6 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. Chicago's defense is opportunistic. It was very quiet against the Lions. I think they're good for a turnover or two in this contest. So that's why I think the Bears can get a game-changing play from that perspective.
I'm with you. I'm going Bears.
So we're even on that one. I think New Orleans has been a very popular selection based on the emails that I've received.
And only one NFC East game this week because the Giants are playing the Eagles and the Redskins are playing
on their bye week.
And Denver visiting the Cowboys. And I think the Cowboys will put up a good fight in this game. They have the tendency, in my opinion, to rise to the occasion against the better teams. And Tony Romo, I think, will throw with Peyton Manning a little bit. But the Cowboys' defense simply gives up too many yards. And when they play against good quarterbacks, Eli Manning and Phillip Rivers this year, they have been torn up a little bit. And Peyton Manning, must be licking his chops, taking a look at that Cowboys pass defense this year with the way he's moved the football. I just think this is going to be like a 40-30 type of game, but I think the Broncos end up coming up on top.
Well, here's the best way to sum up that contest. They're up 21-10, Dallas over San Diego, and they fell apart in the second half. What does Manning and the Broncos do so effectively in the second half?
They dominate second half.
So there you go. I'm taking Denver in this contest as well. There's just something lacking from this defense. I thought with them moving to a 4-3, John, it was a good fit based on the personnel. Bruce Carter has been a disappointment so far this season.
And so is Maurice Claiborne. And those must be two of your best players on defense, and they've been huge disappointments.
Now they're relying on Ernie Sims. Claiborne and Brandon Carr were supposed to be a dynamic duo at the corner spots. When these guys don't live up to expectations, it's very hard to come through with victories.
And two young safeties, too, Barry Church and J.J. Wilcox against Peyton Manning, also very, very dangerous.
So since we don't have any more NFC East games, you went the route of your favorite team, the Texans, going to San Francisco to play the Niners. Well, two teams struggling so far.
I'm going to stick with my home theme of the week. I do not like the Texans on the road. I think the 49ers are rounding into shape. I love the way they played last week, getting back to that power running game with Frank Gore. I like the 49ers to win fairly big in this game. I think it's a two-score, double-digit ball game.
I'm actually going to go with Houston in this contest.
Wow, that's surprising.
I think they're due for a bounce-back game, to be honest with you. And they played very well in the first half, and you have to credit their defense. San Francisco's offense has not wowed me. You mentioned Frank Gore got on track, but that was against that St. Louis defense, which is really underwhelmed so far this season.
Especially against the run.
Oh, they've been awful. And that front seven was supposed to be vastly improved with all the playmakers that they have in the mix. They have a lot of young guys playing that linebacker and defensive tackle spot. They just have not panned out so far. San Francisco scares me. Outside of Anquan Boldin, I don't see a consistent weapon in that receiving
corps. Vernon Davis.
Yeah, but Vernon Davis has been very, very up and down, and he's been battling injuries. Kyle Williams is more a special teams player than a reliable receiver. And Houston's defense is not the type of defense that you could just take up and down the field. Maybe if you have a mobile quarterback, you can find holes to get around, and Russell Wilson showed that. So Colin Kaepernick, to me, is going to have to run. He's going to have to be creative to catch this Houston defense off guard. That's why I feel confident with the Texans.
All right, wild card game, Lance. I'm going to go Kansas City in Tennessee. Tennessee with their quarterback issues. Jake Locker not going to play in this game. The Chiefs might struggle stopping Chris Johnson a little bit, but I think they're a very disciplined football team. I think they will do enough to beat Tennessee in Tennessee. I'll take the Chiefs as my wild card.
That was the exact game that I chose.
Really?
For my wild card.
Right,
I picked also Kansas City over the Titans. I like the Chiefs in this contest. Tennessee going with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I think he's due for a turnover or two based on his track record with Buffalo. And Kansas City has shown that they can pile up those turnovers this season.
Now, I also thought about Arizona at home against Carolina as my wild card game. That was another game I thought about. I really do like Arizona in that contest. As for my upset special, I have two. I have two that I like.
You always have two.
And you know what? Last week, if I would have went with the Bills like I wanted to, I would have actually gotten that win, the Bills upsetting the Ravens last week, and I was wrong about that. So here are my two upsets that I like, and I'll decide which one I want to use for my official upset. But the first upset I like is going all the way to Monday night. Actually, this is not the Monday night game. I'm sorry. I do not like the Jets to beat the Falcons.
I was going to say, wow.
That's crazy
talk.
That's
bold.
This happens to be the game on the bottom of the list, so that's why I thought Monday night. I think Oakland is going to beat San Diego at home. I think San Diego, coming off the big win against Dallas, will have a little bit of a letdown. The Raiders have been competitive this year. I don't think Terrell Pryor is an NFL quarterback that's going to win you a Super Bowl, but he's been good enough. I think they can beat San Diego at home. That's one upset I like. Number two upset that I like. And you might argue you might not consider this an upset. I think Baltimore goes into Miami and wins that game.
Boy, you're just picking every single game that I selected. The spreads weren't great in terms of the choices this week, by the way.
They were
limited. I also like the Ravens knocking off the Dolphins, too.
You like the Ravens-Dolphins, too, huh?
So that makes
And
that
you're a big
you're
Dolphins
go.
Guy. You've been picking all well, over
I have,
the Dolphins all year.
Did you see how they performed against New Orleans?
I can see them
now taking a turn for the worst. This offensive line has been terrible. 18 sacks they've allowed on Ryan Tannehill.
I hate to take Oakland. I mean, it's the Raiders.
That's bold. It takes cojones, okay? That's what that's an example of. Do you want to be a man or do you want to be a boy? That's what you have to ask yourself
well,
right now.
Well, you're going
to
be the boy, typically, based on your size. So you're going to go Baltimore. So I'm good. I will go bold, and I will pick the Oakland Raiders.
There you go. Raiders overcharged. By the way, are you going to stay up late for that contest? 11:30 kickoff on Sunday night. Did you hear about them moving that game because of the A's-Tigers series?
I did. And no, I will not be staying up late for that.
So we'll have to wait till the Monday morning show for you to see.
No, it depends.
Indeed.
I have Antonio Gates in a fantasy league. I might have to, you know, burn the midnight oil a little bit.
He's
been, by the way, how
that.
Good has he been this year? Reliving old-school greatness, Antonio Gates.
Yeah, it's one game. I mean, let's relax.
One game. He had 100 yards in the earlier game this year, too. He's been very good. Antonio Gates.
I got to look this up. I don't know if you're imagining this. I don't remember Antonio Gates lighting things up each and every
Antonio
week.
Gates has had a very good season. He's
this
been
is the year after,
consistent.
By the way, I take him on my fantasy team.
Well, of
team.
Course. That's because you don't know how to judge people. Look at that. That is an excellent year thus far.
Well, wait a minute.
Antonio
That's his
Gates.
Totals. I want to see the game-by-game situation. Okay, he's had two good games.
He's had two good games.
11
for 124 is excellent. He has two touchdowns already. 7 for 55 is not a bad game. He's been excellent. He's been better than you would have expected.
Do you have him in our league?
I think I do.
You
yeah.
got him a steal for like $5 or something?
I remember I got him very early for like $7, and I was like, maybe I shouldn't have done that. I'm actually starting two tight ends every week. I'm starting him and Julius Thomas.
Oh, that's right. You got Julius Thomas off waivers.
Yeah, that's
But at
true.
Least I got Julian Edelman.
I want to get your opinion on this. I'm in two leagues. In my other league, I made a trade yesterday for particularly Alfred Morris was on bye. My only backup running back was Pierre Thomas, and the Saints are a mess. You don't know what they're doing with their running backs, right?
He's got a good track record against the Bears, by the way.
He does, but I was a little worried about it. So I took Mike Wallace, who's been awful this year except for one good game. I traded him straight up for Willis McGahee, Brown's starting running back.
Well, I think you need to sell McGahee now. When his value is up, he's getting a lot of carries. I think the Browns are going to come back down to earth.
Well, but I think it worked out for at least 1 week. He had 70 yards last night and a touchdown. So that was pretty. And Mike, I can't trust Mike Wallace. He's too up and down. How are you going to start this guy?
Tannehill's going to collapse a little bit. He's going to come back down to earth, too. This Dolphins offense started good.
They don't like to go downfield either. They like a lot of the short stuff.
Well, he can't have an opportunity to throw down the field. It's like the Giants right now. He's getting no protection.
Yeah.
Tannehill drops back. He sees defenders in his face.
And Lamar Miller hasn't exactly lit it up on the ground.
Neither has Daniel Thomas.
No.
They've had no semblance of a running game. They've had a flash here or there. It's very hard to get things down the field. Look at the team that you cover. That's all you need to understand.
All right, here we go. Keys for the game on Sunday, Lance, very quickly. Boy, I think with the couple things you have to do. One, I think you need to finally get some long scoring drives. You need to run the football a little bit. Need to be patient on offense. The Eagles have given a lot of points. If you dominate that time of possession, you wear the Eagle defense down, you can do some damage in the second half. That's one. Number two, you got to prevent the big play. And the Giants secondary is banged up to all, you know what, make the Eagles sustain long drives, get down the field, and then maybe you can slow them down in the red zone where you mentioned they've had some problems this year, just about 44%, I think, getting touchdowns. So you got to prevent the big play. And I think if you do those two things, I think you'll probably be okay in this game. And look, I know I'm getting greedy here. I'm going for three. Can you get to Michael Vick? Can you get a couple of sacks? Can you force him to fumble the football? The Eagles have continuously shot themselves in the foot on offense this year, despite the fact they have a ton of yards. Let's keep that trend going.
Red zone defense is my key.
Yeah.
I'm not so concerned about giving up the big play, but as long as you hold Philadelphia to field goals, because if it comes down to an offensive clinic, as you predicted, John, if you get the touchdown and they get the field goal, you're in good shape. The problem with the Eagles against Denver last week, it was sort of an offensive clinic, but the Broncos were getting a touchdown and the Eagles were coming back with just a field goal.
And I want to see the Giants block a lot better this week. The Eagles do not have a dominating front seven by any means. They have some good players, though. Trent Coley's a little out of position as a 3-4 outside linebacker. Kendricks and D'Amico Ryans are pretty good inside linebacker. That's fine, but they don't have the Poes, the Houstons, the Tamba Alis, even the Charles Johnsons, the Hardys, the DeMarcus Wares, you know, they don't have those types of guys that should dominate you up front. I want to see this Giants offensive line put a little thing together this week, run the ball a little bit, give your quarterback some time. I want to see that.
I agree. Pass protection would probably be my key on offense. It's not necessarily that the Giants need to get the big plays. The big plays, to me, will develop, assuming that you give Eli Manning an opportunity.
I'm with you. Lance, enjoy the weekend. And, of course, you can check out Lance Meadow on the Coors Light Giants game day, which comes your way at 11:30. We're back on WFAN the rest of the year, by the way. If you come to the game early, you can check us out in the plaza by the MetLife Gate as well. You can say hello. Lance can sign some autographs.
I see you stole my line.
With you. And it'll be a very good time. I'll be there. Jeff Fiegels will pop his head in. Tatino will pop his head in. And we'll have a good time. And, of course, you can check out the postgame show. Lance is joined by Bob Papa and Carl Banks immediately after the game on WFN for 2 full hours.
Now, the last time we were outside, it was the Broncos game. We've only had one home game so far this season.
Correct.
If memory serves me correct, there was an instance where a few fans did pull you aside and give you a nice pep talk and tell you something. You weren't willing to tell me that off the air. But I think there's no better opportunity to share this story right now before we sign off.
We had a little meet and greet.
A little meet and greet. Oh, that's what we're referring to it now.
A photo might have been taken.
Really? Wow, I didn't know that. Now, was this the cell phone or the normal camera?
It was a cell phone camera, I believe.
So you could be trending on some social media site.
I don't believe I'm trending anywhere.
You never know.
Unless it's negative.
But somebody has a nice photo of you and them.
That's correct.
At a Giants game.
That's correct.
I can't tell you the memories that they're going
to
cherish.
They also asked for Michael Eisen. They go, where's Eisen? They're really, really excited for Eisen to be there. He wasn't.
Oh, maybe you can work on a future date.
He also had a very, very serious question. He asked me why I hired this guy, Lance Meadow, to be such a big part of the pregame show.
Really?
No, he did not.
Well, that would have been a natural question as well.
Well, that's excellent job as always, Mike.
Sounds good. I'll see you on Monday.
Everybody enjoy your weekend. Stay tuned to Giants.com for more preview of Giants Eagles all day long. Preview report with the Tino and I tomorrow. Make sure you check it out. Giants and Eagles. Hopefully we'll actually talk about a win Monday morning. We'll find out.
Pretty nice.
We'll see you then.